Hello, ladies and gents, and welcome to this episode of the Dugout Debate podcast. Since we recorded, some further news has actually come out about the Ben Stokes incident, so I'll just give that to you now. The England-Wales Cricket Board has confirmed that Ben Stokes will not travel to Australia with the rest of the Ashes squad as it stands. The England Director of Cricket, Andrew Strauss, has said, "We have spoken to Ben and assured him that our decision in no way prejudges the outcome of the ongoing police investigation or Cricket Discipline Commission process, as can be seen by the award of central contracts." This is obviously very interesting given what we actually go on to talk about in this podcast, but bear in mind that this news came out after we recorded. Also, a bit more news from the ECB, and they announced that Johnny Bairstow, Jake Ball and Liam Plunkett have also been fined for unprofessional conduct, which is unrelated to the Stokes and Hales investigation. So, that was very nice of them releasing all this information about 3 hours after we recorded the rest of the podcast, but hopefully you all enjoy it anyway, and it actually does have some quite good bearing on the rest of the stuff we talk about. One more thing, I had some audio problems with my part of the recording in this next part of the podcast, so please just try and bear with it. It should be okay for the second half. Enjoy the show. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Dugout Debate podcast. This week, we're going to be talking cricket and discipline issues in sport. I'm delighted to be joined by Jamie Mann today, who's a cricket writer and a good friend of mine. We actually used to play cricket together. Well, I say play. I mean, he played cricket while I fielded, but there we go. So, Jamie, I think, as we've had a few questions about this in the past, can you just give us a quick roundup of the basic premise of cricket?
Yeah, of course I can, Tim. Thanks for having me on the show. So, cricket is a wonderful game for a few of you guys listening maybe that don't have a clue about the game. It is a game played between two sets of teams, 11 aside, and there's a batting team and a bowling team. The team that is bowling tries to get the batters out in as quickly time as possible, and the batting team try and accumulate as many runs as they can by hitting the ball and running between the wickets, scoring boundaries by hitting the ball into the crowd. And in recent years, there's been a 2020 format that's been introduced, which is a fast-natured game, and that's to bring the crowds in. So that's the sort of stuff that you guys will be seeing on TV more. For the guys that have obviously know a lot more about the game, there is the Test Arena as well. So we won't go too much into that. But yeah, it's a great game, and it's growing across many nations at the moment.
So essentially, there are three different formats. There's 2020, one day, and Test matches. 2020 takes what, 3 hours, 3.5 hours?
Yeah, 3 hours, yeah.
One day takes a whole day, and Test matches can take anything from sort of a day to 5 days and still end in a draw, which is why I think some people are a little bit confused by it. But I think from personal experience, if you actually play the game and you know what's going on, it doesn't really matter how long it is, it's always exciting. But if you are just watching a load of men in white stand around for a day and you don't really know what's going on, I can see where the boredom comes from. So Jamie, can you tell me a little bit about your history in cricket and what you're involved with at the minute?
So I've always been involved in cricket. It was one of my sort of main loves from about the age of 9 or 10. I've always played, I still play. I've done a lot of coaching as well. That was my background at university. I did a coaching degree, which taught me a lot about the sport as well. So I still play. I watch a lot of cricket, obviously. And in recent years, I've been doing a lot more writing around the sport, a lot more journalistic stuff, which I've really enjoyed. This is the first time I've kind of spoken to someone about it, which is a great experience for me. But I've done a lot of writing, and I've actually just taken on a role working for a company that provides media for the ICC. For those of you who don't know, that's the International Cricket Council, which is a great opportunity for me. So in essence, I'm providing, it's a wide range role, but I'll be providing social media for the ICC. I'll be doing write-ups for some of their matches, and I'll be doing live commentary as well. So if you guys ever are on the ICC website looking at the live commentary for the games, that might well be me. So yeah, it's a very good role for me, and it's one that sort of will help me progress my career, hopefully.
That's really interesting. To anyone who does want to actually follow Jamie and what he's doing, we'll put some links in the description and stuff, and I'll visit it at the end. I think, again, just to sort of give the listeners who don't necessarily have the best idea as to why cricket is a great sport, do you want to just quickly take us through why you love cricket?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's difficult for me because I've been involved for so long that it's hard to put my finger on the exact reason why I love it. But I think if I was to do that, it's it's a game that always ebbs and flows. You can't really, it's very difficult to sometimes know who's winning, and you always get people saying, oh, who's winning the game, but actually until both teams have batted, you really can't answer that question. So sometimes that's a slightly frustrating question for us cricket nuts, but it's a beautiful game in the sense that it always ebbs and flows. You can't really ever say for definite this team is going to win. Like in football, maybe if they're 4-0 up with 20 minutes to play, you know there's a clear winner there. In cricket, things can change so quickly. You can have spells of the game where for 2 or 3 hours, very little will be happening and the crowd will just be sort of drifting away or reading their books or whatever. And then out of nowhere, bang, the game will erupt into sort of everything will start happening at once. And then for a period of half an hour, an hour, there'll be a huge excitement. A game can build up over a course of a few hours or even a few days, like you touched upon earlier in a test match. And it can really come to a massive conclusion at the end, which is absolutely great. And I find it's a very fascinating sport to follow over a course of hours or days. And like I said before, in a test match, you can watch for 3 or 4 days and then it can all build up to a final finish. So I would say that's one of the reasons. And also, it's a beautiful game in the sense that it's a summer sport in the UK. It's always got a kind of a sunny background, which is always nice. And it's just one of those sports that you can relax and watch. Different from when you're playing, but when you're watching, it's a great spectator sport. So if you haven't watched it before, I would highly advise you give it a go.
For sure. Just throwing in my own opinion, back in the day when I played, I was a distinctly average leg spinner. And the thing that I really enjoyed the most was those one-on-one battles that you get. I know there are sort of 11 guys fielding and two batsmen playing, but when you've got a player down one end batting and a bowler who's trying to work out how he's playing and trying to adjust what he's doing to try and get that player out, I really enjoyed that sort of one-on-one nature. Well, it is a battle. I said battle, and I think that's a very appropriate word for it. I certainly remember facing you with your medium swing and just going, like, I don't know what to do with this. So yeah, it is really good fun.
I remember hitting you into the trees as well, Tim.
Yes, I believe that happened maybe once or twice when it lobbed it full toss to you. But there we go. That's probably why I'm not playing anymore. Anyway. So, for those who, again, don't really follow the sport yet, you might be aware of something called the Ashes. It's been talked about fairly recently. Jamie, can you just tell us what is the Ashes and why are the Brits and Australians so obsessed with them?
Well, the Ashes is basically a little trophy. It's a little urn, which looks absolutely nothing, but it's contested with fire and guts all throughout. Basically, since the start of time, Australia and England have been playing cricket since the 1800s. And the first time, I believe, 1882, the first time Australia beat England on English turf was at the Oval. And that was the death of English cricket, according to many, because in a sport that we'd founded, Australia came over to our own backyard and decided to beat us 1-0, which was very upsetting for most of the English gentlemen. So we decided that we were going to burn the bales from the stumps of that test match and put them in a little urn and call it the Ashes. So ever since then, that has been the trophy, if you can call it a trophy, that these two sort of powerhouse cricketing nations have been competing for. It's the rivalry between the two countries for something like that is absolutely incredible. And I would say it's one of the sort of the best sporting rivalries in world sport, to be honest with you. And I'm very much looking forward to it this winter. It happens every 4 years in different instalments, if you like, because the English summer is different to the Australian summer. So we'll play them out there over this Christmas. And then a year and a half later, they'll be returning to England to see who can take the Ashes back again.
I think it's very difficult to sort of get across the fiery passion that it does evoke in each of the nations involved. I mean, if you're outside of it, then perhaps you won't necessarily get that. But in England, certainly when, you know, back in 2005, when the England team was somewhat resurrected,
the whole nation got behind it. And I think it's quite unique because you don't really get these sort of nation v nation battles anymore, really. It's more tournament sport that we tend to enjoy. But yeah, that 1v1, that nation v nation rivalry is certainly something to witness. So if you're ever over here during an Ashes summer or in Australia during an Ashes summer, it's definitely worth keeping an eye on. We'll move on now to some slightly more controversial topics in the world of cricket. As a lot of you might have heard, there have been a lot of conversations about a player called Ben Stokes recently. We'll get onto that in a second, and indeed Chris and I will talk about it as well. But the England Ashes squad has finally been selected, with three test debutants in Ben Folkes, Mason Crane and Craig Overton, with Ben Stokes likely to be omitted due to his off-field naughtiness. What are your thoughts on the strength of the squad and the chances down under?
Look, I don't think it's the strongest squad we've taken to Australia. But in saying that, we have some exceptional players in the squad. A lot will rely on the likes of Joe Root, Alistair Cook, James Anderson, Stuart Broad, Johnny Bairstow, you can chuck into there as well. Because there are established players, but every side will have those established players. I think Australia are in a similar position. They are very reliant on their seam attack. Mitchell Starc, if fit. Their spinner, Nathan Lyon. They're very reliant on a few players. Their captain, Steve Smith. So but I don't think it's as one-sided as a lot of people are going to make out. The key defining factor, as always, is the conditions. Australia are very good in their home conditions and they will be favourites. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But I think you look at the players, the debutant players that you mentioned, there's no guarantee that they're going to play a test match. This is a 16-man squad and there are some people in there that you would maybe question. But for me, it's more or less the best squad that the selectors could have picked. James Vince was another one that was sort of questioned when he was selected to bat number three, so he'll be batting at three at Brisbane. But to be honest with you, there weren't a lot of players in certain positions sticking their hands up and say, definitely pick me. So, like I said, it's going to be a lot dependent on our key players. But these guys that are around the squad, they've got a big role to play as well. It's a long tour, 3 months out there or whatever it is. And yeah, it's important that people chip in when they can. If you look back at the 2010-11 series that I was lucky enough to be out there, and we actually managed to beat Australia 3-1. You end up using a certain amount of players in an Ashes series. It's five test matches, it's harsh conditions, a tough tour. There's also a Lions squad out there as well, which will be shadowing the main squad, which very crucially for me includes a guy called Mark Wood, who's the quickest bowler we have. And for me, he will, if fit, and that's why he's not been included in the main squad, if fit, he will make a trip across and probably play in a couple of test matches. So again, I wouldn't read too much into the squad. It is an Ashes squad, but there is room for change if needed. Again, as we'll probably talk about in a minute, I'm sure Stokes is a very important member or non-member of that squad. So I'm sure we'll talk about that in a minute. But yeah, I think the squad is as good as it could be. Not as good as previous squads, but we had to pick from what we had, and good luck to them.
Yeah, so we will go on Stokes right now, in fact. I think it's fair to say even that Stokes is probably England's most enigmatic player. He can change the game on sort of both sides of batting and bowling. So with Stokes, there have been several instances, both on and off the field, throughout his cricketing career. But this most recent allegation of punching an individual outside of a Bristol nightclub is probably the most severe. Do you reckon this could spell the end of Stokes' England career?
I think the simple answer to that is no. I think it's very likely that he'll play for England again. When I really cannot answer. I wish I could. But I don't think that it will spell the end of his England career, no.
I've seen quite recently, actually, that there's talks of giving him a new central contract. So the answer to that is actually probably no. But how long do you think he will be out for? Do you think that he will actually end up missing the Ashes? Because he is undoubtedly probably, if not our most important player, certainly in our top three. Do you think that the selection of him will stick for the Ashes, or do you think they'll find a way to crowbar him in, possibly with the Lions, and then if needed, in with the real squad.
Yeah, well, you're right. He has been awarded a new central contract, I believe, today. I don't think they really had much choice in that because the police reports haven't come out yet and the incident you talk about. The problem the ECB have is that these police reports won't be published until nearer the start of the Ashes series, if not during the Ashes series. So there's very little the ECB can do at this point, really. And I think it is a lose-lose situation for them. If they say to Stokes that he's not going and playing in any part of this Ashes series, England lose, I think, their best and most influential player. He is effectively two players in one, in the way that he bats and the way that he bowls. And to be perfectly honest, if he doesn't play any part, it's a very, very difficult thing for England to get anything out of that series. That's my opinion. I think that's the opinion of many. And England obviously rely a lot on their success. A lot is based on how they do in the Ashes. So the ECB don't take him, they're losing there. And if they do decide to take him out to the Ashes, the media coverage is going to be terrible. And for Ben himself, it's going to be a ridiculously difficult tour with all the pressure that comes from it. It's a long tour, as I mentioned before. He's not going to be able to leave the hotel room. He won't be able to go out and have dinner with his mates. He'll be locked in his room and the Australians will be all over him. So it's a really difficult one and I don't think there is a right answer to it. It's a lose-lose. I think if I was making a decision, which I can't, having not knowing all the facts, but I would say a compromise may be the best possible way, and this may or may not work, but I would say something along the lines of a 2 or 3 match test match ban for Stokes might be appropriate. We saw Warner back in 2013, who actually punched the England, current England captain, and he got a 2-test match ban. Times are changing, I know. I think if this was 10 years ago, Ben might have got away with it a little bit more. But yeah, I would say a 2-test match ban might be appropriate.
That's really interesting. I hadn't really thought of that. It's very much portrayed as an all or nothing type thing, where perhaps a more mediated approach might be sensible. Chris and I will talk about this in a bit more detail. But obviously, England cricket has had its fair share of misdemeanours in the past with its players going out and sort of having a bit of a jolly and ending up in slightly worse for wear incident, worse for wear circumstances. I mean, we had the Fredolo incident, obviously, and then stuff with Kevin Peterson. And I know these are the most enigmatic players, but do you think there's potentially a bit of a culture issue in England cricket with the way that the players are sort of conducting themselves throughout the summer? And I say this because these instances are happening when the players are sort of, they're in competition mode. I mean, the Fredolo stuff, that was during the World Cup. Obviously, this is the Stokes incident has happened during the Test series with the West Indies. So yeah, just to recap, do you think there could potentially be a culture issue in England cricket?
My personal opinion on that would be that cricket's a unique sport in the sense that when you go and play in your competitions and your tours away from home, you're away for a long time and there's no escaping from the fact that you're in Australia for 3 months. In the Fredolo case, you're in West Indies for the World Cup for 6 weeks, 7 weeks, whatever it is. And ultimately, these guys, humans, they're going to need to get away from the sport in some way or another. Now, I'm not advocating that they go out drinking until 2 a.m. in the morning, because that's when we see incidents as Ben Stokes, as such as Andrew Flintoff. But again, you have to remember that these guys, in order, if we want them to perform at their best and provide maximum entertainment for us when we go through the turnstiles and watch them or watch them on the television, we have to allow them a little bit of freedom. And that might sound like a strange answer after something so significant and so sort of damaging for the sport has happened with Stokes, but having been on a few tours at a very much lower level myself, you have to understand that these guys need to get away from the game, and in order for them to sort of perform at their best, they can't be hidden, they can't be sort of kept away from the public, because it just wouldn't work. And I think you can compare this to other sports, and we heard Southgate talking about it the other day. The footballers, they're in Moldova or wherever they are, they're there for 3 nights or 2 nights, and then they go home And they have the freedom to do whatever they want. I mean, yes, they're going to be in the media eye and they have to hide away from it a little bit, but it's a very different sport. And being away from home for such a long period of time, any ex-cricket professional that's toured Australia will tell you, you need to go out and have your dinner with your mates. You need to go and have a few drinks every so often. Yes, not before a game, but... So to answer the question, I don't think personally there's a culture issue. We've had it for years. We used to have both, and we used to have people like that. Flintoff, I think Stokes for me is in the same category. 20 years ago, players would go out drinking before a game, before the night of a game, and they got away with it. The times have changed. Yes, I know they're role models, and they're professional athletes now. So it's a balance. I mean, we heard Bayliss talk about the possibility of a curfew as well, and he said that doesn't work either. So ultimately, these guys are adults, and yes, they're cricketers and they're professional sportsmen, but we have to trust them to a certain extent and allow them to have that little bit of freedom to enable them to perform to their best when they get out on the field.
That's really interesting. It's nice to have a viewpoint from somebody who's actually been on tours themselves. Yeah, I think it's fair understanding that these guys, you know, they are young men at the end of the day and they need to have their downtime. But I do agree with the sentiment that certainly during competition phases, I mean, that Fredlow thing, that was a bit ridiculous. In the middle of a World Cup, you know, I'm never going to rationalise what Stokes was doing. I get, you know, go home, relax, or go out, just have a couple of drinks. But let's be a little bit sensible. But anyway, I think that's brilliant. Chris and I will obviously carry on the conversation ourselves. But Jamie, where can people find you online, on Twitter?
You can find me online. My blog is The Cricket Man. So I'm sure we'll get a link to that. But yeah, just have a little read of my stuff if you want to. And I'll be sure to be adding to it in the near future. So thanks for the support. And thanks for the plug.
Brilliant. Jamie, it's been fantastic having you on. You've given us some really good insights there.
Thank you very much, Tim. Enjoyed it.
So that was really interesting, having that chat with Jamie. Hopefully you like hearing from special guests. We're going to get quite a few more in the future. But for now, I think we'll just pick up on something that we briefly mentioned during our chat, and it's to do with the recent Ben Stokes incident. Chris, can you give us a little bit more background as to what actually happened there?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, we need to just say before we start this that it's still a criminal investigation by the police, so nothing has been set in stone yet, but here are the bare facts as we understand them at the moment. The incident happened on Monday 25th of September at Embargo's nightclub in Bristol at 2:30 a.m. Stokes was arrested for actual bodily harm, or ABH, and despite being released without charge, as we've mentioned, the incident remains under investigation by the police, with inquiries assisted by some video footage that the Sun newspaper got their hands on and released on Thursday the 28th of September. Stokes was named as vice-captain in the Ashes squad the day before, Wednesday the 27th, but after more information about the incident came out, the English Cricket Board, or ECB, have announced that Stokes and teammate Alex Hales, also present on the night, will not be considered for selection for England matches until further notice. So that is how we stand.
So yeah, it's pretty dramatic, isn't it? That's quite a major incident, especially on the when English cricket was in the limelight anyway, off the back of a recent series with the West Indies team, and obviously with this Ashes squad announcement coming up. I think what we can do is investigate sort of the sort of culture of sport and whether this is endemic in all sports, or rather, is it something to just specifically with cricket? So there was an interesting discussion the other night on one of the BBC cricket discussion programmes over whether or not it was actually the players that are at fault here or if it was the management as well. What are your thoughts?
So interestingly, this wasn't the first time that Stokes was being caught out late at night during a series. As reported by the Daily Mail this week, Stokes was out in Manchester till 3 a.m. during the recent test series against South Africa up there. So surely there was more that the management could have done to stop this happening. They've had a bit of warning by the looks of it, but they didn't heed it, and it doesn't seem like they've managed to do anything in the time intervening. Privately, something needed to be said to Stokes and his teammates that this wasn't acceptable behaviour, and they must be thinking, could we have done more to prevent this from happening now? It has also been mentioned by some in the media that England head coach Trevor Bayliss and director of England cricket Andrew Strauss are quite standoffish when it comes to the squad, and perhaps if they had less of that attitude, the attitude that seems to be that players like Stokes, who's 26, are all men and can look after themselves, then incidents like this might not happen. Of course, players should take responsibility for their own actions, but the management involved do need to take some responsibility for it as
well. Yeah, it's an interesting discussion, this, actually, because, you know, where does the buck actually stop? And in this particular instance, you have to think that it's going to stop with Stokes. I mean, he's the one in the firing line. There's no one who's going to, well, I'd assume there's nobody who's going to walk from the England cricket board or from the England setup itself other than Stokes. I think that it's predominantly the players' responsibility just to keep themselves sensible. I mean, particularly at the moment, they're mid-season at the moment, and what on earth they're doing, going out, getting absolutely wasted a couple of days before a match, right at the point, as I said, when the whole of the cricket world is looking at this team. So, you know, it is a stupid thing that he's done, but, you know, we'll see what lies in the future. However, that being said, while I think it is predominantly the players who should be taking the bulk of the blame for what they do, could it be an issue with England cricket just more endemically? Because obviously in the past we've had quite a few instances of players doing questionable things during the season. We had Freddie Flintoff in the infamous Fredello incident during the World Cup in the West Indies, where after they were defeated by the New Zealand, he went out and he got a bit drunk just a couple of days before another key match against Canada, and had to be rescued after falling off a pedalo. I think was it in a lake? quite unsurprisingly, he was reprimanded, and at the time he was the vice captain of the one day team.
To me, it just seems like common sense, as someone that's not a professional sportsman, that you wouldn't go out before you've got a game and go out till God knows what time and drink absolutely crazy amounts of booze, but clearly they know better than us.
Well, exactly, and a sport that is so reliant on being able to react ridiculously quickly to things, you know, you have like half a second before the ball gets to you.
Yeah, exactly. The slightest bit of drink in your system just isn't going
to
help.
And I suppose to an extent it is, the relaxation is somewhat encouraged by the management team. Just go out, have a bit of fun.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not what they had in mind, to be fair. But, you know, these guys have got to get themselves away from the pressures that come with international tournaments. Yeah. So I guess, you know, have a couple of drinks, that's fine. Let's not fall into rivers, lakes, whatever it was. Another point I'm going to make just quickly is that these incidences seem to be happening to England's most enigmatic players. Stokes, I think most people can accept, is in the top two or three players in the England team. He's probably, after maybe Joe Root, he's probably the most important player, because he offers so much with both the bat and the ball. He has won several games recently just by himself. So Stokes, he's enigmatic. Freddie Flintoff, he was pretty much, well, Ben Stokes is considered to be the next Freddie Flintoff, so the traits are shared there. And then we have Kevin Peterson as well, who was always fairly outspoken during his time and had his fair share of difficulties whilst in the England setup. Probably the beginning of the end of the career, his career, was some defamatory text that he allegedly sent during the South Africa series in 2012, and essentially this was him sending texts to some of the South African team about Andrew Strauss or some of the other players, I think.
Yeah.
Not a good move, considering A, this came out later. He didn't seem particularly apologetic at the time, and then he was suddenly very apologetic. And he wasn't originally dropped, and then eventually made his way back into the side. But I don't think he ever really fully recovered from that in the international standpoint. And part of sport is having these big characters, and I think the guys who make it to the very top are the people who are so supremely self-confident and self-assured, and with that maybe they don't have quite the sense of being having a filter in what they do. So while, you know, I think the buck does stop with the player, I can't necessarily forgive the actions that they do, but they do have a completely different mindset.
Yeah, again, that seems like common sense to me with the Kevin Peterson situation. Surely you're not going to send text to an opposition to let them know what your captain's been doing. But again, that might just be me. With KP, it's interesting, actually. The media have said before that he's not actually that confident when he goes out and speaks to people. He's obviously on field, his persona's larger than life, and you can see that he's confident, and he's definitely confident in his cricket. But in his day-to-day life. He's apparently quite an introverted guy, so certainly with him that's the case. I'm not sure. I think Freddie is a lot more outgoing, obviously, from his TV appearances. I think he is someone that likes to be larger than life.
And on T20 finals day, he was he dressed himself up as Elvis and they all sang Sweet Caroline together, and then he managed to trip over the speakers. It was very funny. Yeah,
he's not a shrinking violet, is he? But that's an interesting point that you make, that whether they the point that they're so good on the field, whether they need that little bit within the inside them to make them so good on the field, but that does have a detrimental effect off the field. Yeah. Whether the two go hand in hand,
I think that at the very top level, 99% of the time, it's your mental ability that really defines you from the rest of the sort of class of athletes that you're with. I think that most cricket players, certainly at an international level, they all have the ability to play the ball technically or bowl it technically very well. But cricket is very much a 1v1 battle. And I think if you've really got that edge and you can win that battle time and time again, like Stokes can. I mean, he's often, you can see him chatting to players while he's bowling, while he's batting, just trying to get that edge, sledging them, you know, giving them all that. And
which is interesting. That's probably why, well, part of the reason why he's been vice-captain. He was named as vice-captain in the Ashes squad because he is so vocal on the field. He gives a lot of support to Joe Root once they're out there on the pitch. But obviously he's going to have that strip from him and everything else because of the incident.
It's a shame what's happened. But I did say earlier that this is not potentially just cricket that has these sort of problems with their players going out and doing silly things. I think that all sports have their players that go out and do stuff from the minor stuff to the really quite major stuff. I mean, we'll start off with England rugby, and I think I've found some stuff about American football just in the last couple of years. But Chris, if you want to chat about England rugby, because I suppose that's your area of expertise.
Yeah. So as you've mentioned, it does seem to happen in most sports, sadly, that we hear about these sorts of issues. In this age of cameras everywhere and social media, it's not an impossible for sporting celebrities to get away with misdemeanors, big and small. So like even being out in nightclubs till the early hours, you're not going to be able to get away with that kind of thing. So for England rugby, the example that I'm going to use is back in August, Denny Solomona and Manu Tuilagi were sent home from an England training camp. And to quote the RFU press release, because of team culture issues is what they called it. But in plain English, the pair left the England training camp in Teddington and went out drinking and returned in the early hours. Interestingly, that's the first time that Eddie Jones has actually had to discipline players since he took charge of the England team. So it's not as big an issue in rugby as some people may think. So I think they'd arranged a curfew from the sounds of it, and that these guys just didn't adhere to it at all and decided to go out and have a jolly in London while they could. But that's obviously, it's not Manu Tuilagi's first indiscretion. He's had a checkered past, shall we say. Back in 2011 at the World Cup, he was warned by police and fined £3,000 for jumping from a ferry in Auckland a day after England's quarter-final World Cup exit. And then in 2013, after the Lions tour, he made a bunny ears gesture behind the then Prime Minister David Cameron while they were posing for a photo outside 10 Downing Street. His most recent incident before this last one was in 2015, when he was fined £6,205 by magistrates after admitting assaulting two police officers in Leicester. So it's definitely not his first time. Tim, do you have any other examples?
Not from rugby, but from American football. I just quickly went through sort of the list of some guys who have been recently suspended for largely off the field, well, for off the field stuff. Obviously, very recently, we've had Ezekiel Elliott, the running back for the Dallas Cowboys, who was suspended for the first six games, I think, of the season, or alleged domestic abuse. He's back now, and I'm not entirely sure what the state of that case is. But
He seems to be playing while the investigation's ongoing, so I'm not sure what's going on.
Yes, I think so. Maybe there's some sort of appeal going on. That seems to be how things work. If you appeal, then or you're temporarily suspended from your suspension. There was another case of domestic abuse with Jonathan Dwyer, the running back for the Steelers and the Cardinals, back in 2014. I think that ended up in some sort of conviction. We had Darrell Washington, the linebacker for the Cardinals, with substance abuse and assault. Aaron Hernandez, very famously with the murder charges and his subsequent death. interestingly enough, actually relating back to our very first podcast, he was actually found to have stage 3 chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which for somebody of his age, he was very young, I think 23, 24, around that age. And for somebody that young to have stage 3 of that disease is quite shocking. So I think could that condition have actually contributed to some of his actions? We don't really know, but you know, I was shocked reading that. I wasn't aware that was the case, especially in somebody so young. Yeah, Adrian Peterson of the Minnesota Vikings, who's now at
he's at New Orleans Saints.
He had trouble back in 2014 for domestic abuse. I think the point that I made it about these guys really being on the edge, on the edge mentally, just day after day. You know, you've got to fight for your world in these sports and constantly be trying to push the boundaries of what you can do mentally. You've got to push your body to the limit. You've got to be taking all these hard hits. You've got to be giving them out. You've got to be running hard. And I don't think it's an excuse in any sense, but I think that somebody of that sort of personality type could be in trouble with the law.
They definitely need a release, don't they? Because that side of their life is so stressful. They need to perform every single weekend in whatever sport they're taking part in. So they need some sort of release outside of that sport. And it does seem to be that it manifests itself in these incidents, sadly, for some of them.
I will say it's definitely the minority. I mean, you hear about these things once or twice a year, maybe, and the majority of the players in whatever you're looking at, I mean, in the NFL, there's hundreds of them, and you might hear of one or two instances a year.
That is why they always make headlines, I guess, because when it's a high-profile athlete and it's not happening actually that regularly, it will end up being a headline news. The example I did a bit of research on was Ray Rice and TMZ, who are obviously a huge media company in the US, got themselves some footage of him punching his fiancée, Janae Palmer, in a lift in Atlantic City. And it's exactly the same as what's happened with Stokes. The media have gone out and seek to try and get the footage to get the example first for everyone to look at. And it's obviously going to give them loads of hits themselves, and it is headline making.
Yeah, it's interesting. But I think just to finish up, something that I thought about while doing some of this research was that there have been instances where players have got in trouble or being found with, you know, banned substances and whatever, but it's not always made a big story of. I think given what you do as a job, it would be quite nice just to hear what you think the role of the PR and communications teams in sports clubs do to sort of nullify some of these stories.
Yeah. So firstly, for any listeners that don't know, my job is to work in a sports team's PR and communications team, and probably the biggest job of any PR or communications team at any business, not just sports club, is to stop bad press coming out about your organisation. For instance, it's alleged that England cricket media team managed to stop the Ben Stokes story about him staying out at till 3 a.m. in Manchester during the test match reaching the papers at the time. So that's only just come out this week, and obviously that's
a separate incident, obviously, because this was in Manchester, yes. Not Bristol. So Stokes had already done something a little bit naughty during the summer. Yeah, so.
Exactly. But they managed to stop that coming out till this week, when obviously all the attention was on Ben Stokes, so all of the media were digging trying to find any information they could on him. And this did eventually come out, but they did manage to stop it allegedly coming out for a few months. And this is a good example to show that it's often impossible to stop a story coming out completely, but it's just possible to alter how it's going to be reported slightly and when and where it finally comes out. I really don't envy the England cricket media team at the moment. They're definitely in damage limitation mode. But often with these instances, you can make a real example of them. So I'm not sure whether England cricket are going to make a real example out of Ben Stokes to make sure that this never happens again.
Okay, I think that's plenty of stuff we've talked about today. It has been quite a diverse podcast, this one. We haven't really focused on one sport. We've actually gone across several, and we hope you enjoyed it. Let us know if you enjoyed hearing from a guest speaker. I really enjoyed the conversation with Jamie, and hopefully we'll get a few more people on in the future. So just to sum up, I think, well, where have we gone, Chris?
So to go back to some of the England cricket stuff that we were discussing before, the issue of management versus players' responsibility, that's definitely a key issue for any of these instances. The culture within any of these sports clubs and teams is also key in these instances and making sure that they don't happen again.
Well, I think finally, these instances, that they're not, we're never going to stop them. They're not going to ever stop happening.
Yeah.
But I think player education surely has to be at the top of the tree in all these circumstances. I mean, these guys, I don't want to throw their pay loads of money to be these sporting professionals that we'd all love to be, because that's so overused. But I think a little bit more common sense really has to be imparted onto them, especially during the season. You know, you can't be going out getting absolutely mashed between games in Bristol. It's just not on.
Yeah, that's the same point, and that it should be the management and the culture of the teams that do that. It should be the player education comes from that, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think we're actually coming from two different angles, but actually arriving at the same conclusion, which is quite nice, isn't it? That's how it's supposed to work. Anyway, I think we'll round up there. Don't forget to follow us on all our social media platforms at Dugout Debate on Twitter and Facebook, and check out our website for all our extra recommended reading on www.dugoutdebatepodcast.com. Thank you very much, and goodbye.